I love getting boxes in the mail. Even though it's usually me who's ordered and paid for whatever's in the box, I still love it. My dogs love it too. That's right, my dogs, because once a month, they get a special box from a company called BarkBox. And inside that box are treats and toys just for them. And they love both. You can get a BarkBox for your dogs too through a monthly subscription when you go to BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ. And when you do this and are a first-time customer of BarkBox, they will donate $25 to Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, helping us to get more greyhounds into homes. Check them out. It's BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ. Welcome to About Greyhounds, the podcast about greyhounds. This is Jacqueline Howard of Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. Before I get started, I just want to mention that you may hear some jingling in the background, maybe some tiptoeing, a little bit of banging. That is because there are 5 greyhounds in the room for this episode. 2 of them are my own. 2 of them are fosters that are being adopted today, and the other is a foster that just arrived this morning. So in New Jersey, we, along with our neighbor states, are pretty lucky. For the most part, we aren't prone to many natural disasters, but they do happen, especially as New Jersey is on the northeast coast of the United States. We're known for our gorgeous beaches and boardwalks along the Atlantic Ocean. Of course, most of us who live here remember Hurricane or Superstorm Sandy, one of the worst disasters to ever hit our area, and that was in 2012. As a matter of fact, as we record this episode, we're within the 2017 hurricane season. This happens between June 1st and November 30th. In this area, we also have something known as nor'easters, which are macro-scale cyclones. Stated simply, nor'easters bring incredibly strong winds. We've also experienced major blizzards. We don't get major earthquakes or tornadoes, though generally these are fairly minor. Forest fires are another type of natural disaster we experience here, though not with great frequency. One of the more frequent weather-related emergencies are floods. Again, we're a coastal state. We also have an abundance of natural lakes and rivers, plus we have mountains that go hand in hand with low-lying areas, also known as flood zones. Of course, there are man-made disasters like massive gas explosions, for example. But wherever you live, your area is probably susceptible to regional-type disasters. Many of these events require safety measures and sometimes evacuations. So when an emergency strikes, how do we keep, in addition to ourselves, our greyhounds safe? Here with me today is Sue Smith. Sue is on the executive board of Greyhound Friends of New Jersey as the treasurer. She also leads our prison foster program and has been a guest on the show before. She's also a volunteer for the Middlesex County Animal Response Team, also known as CARTS. Sue's going to share with us information about CART and how to keep your greyhounds and other pets safe when disaster strikes. Welcome back to About Greyhounds, Sue.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
So, Sue, I mentioned CARTS, and I have to admit, until you had mentioned this to me a few months ago, I actually hadn't heard of it. And once you told me about it and I looked into it, it's an extraordinary organization. So what can you tell me and the audience about CARTS?
Well, CART came about because people will not leave without their animals when there's a disaster. And we go out when there's some type of an emergency, when we're activated. Most of your CARTS are activated through your county emergency management. You have to be activated to go out. What else? It's an all-volunteer program for the most part. There's some training involved, which we'll get into a little bit later, I think. There's some websites that we'll post with this podcast because they'll tell you exactly how to do some stuff. But anybody who wants to help, that can make like a meeting a month, maybe two if we're doing some training, can join a CART. And what CART does is they go out and set up an animal shelter near a people shelter.
Okay.
So that when you get told to evacuate, you pack your car and you take your animals and you go to the shelter designated for animals. Your animal does not stay with you, but your animal will be close by.
And safe.
Safe. There'll be a schedule. You'll be able to see your animal. We still want you to come take care of your animal, but
okay,
on a scheduled basis. Because you will not be the only one coming in and out.
Okay, so when you say come and take care, do you mean if it's a dog, like walking the dog?
Walk the dog, possibly handle the dog. If the dog has issues with other people, we may put you on a different schedule so that you're in more often. We want you to be part of it. We want this to be as normal as possible.
Okay. So can you walk me through a time when you acted in a disaster as a CART volunteer?
Yeah, there was a chemical fire a few years back, and it was in a warehouse. The warehouse was next to a bunch of apartments. The apartments had to be evacuated because of the air quality.
Sure.
Red Cross set up in the school in one area, CART set up in a school in another area. This way, you're close enough that people could get to us, but we were far enough away that we weren't in any danger from the wind.
Okay.
Okay. It's fully funded by the county, and you set up crates. We have the capacity to set up crates. We also have a trailer that has crates and cages permanently mounted in it. Ideally, we would like a room in the shelter, and that's what we had. We had a room, and we set up, and we take in whatever animals need to be taken in.
So, an evacuee who has a pet, say a dog, that goes to the CART shelter.
Yes.
They don't have to pay.
No, there's no fee.
Oh, wow.
There's no fee. Most of your CARTs are hooked up with your county OEM, Office of Emergency Management.
Okay.
And funding comes through the county.
Okay.
Okay. When you evacuate, and we'll talk more about this later, but you need to bring as much stuff for you and your dog as you can.
Okay.
If you can't, just make sure you get you and your dog out safe.
Right. Get out safe. Okay. So you talked about joining CART. Can anybody join a CART, or are there some pre-requirements to joining?
Now, if you want to join, if you go to the website that we're going to mention later, it's a State Department of Agriculture website, Animal Emergencies. It'll let you click on the county you live in, and you can look at the requirements. Some of them are home programs that you do on the computer.
Okay.
That you can do before you join.
Okay.
Okay. Others are classes that you take once you join.
Okay.
We do a couple of drills a year. We do just familiarization with equipment from time to time. Most CARTs meet once a month, just as a CYA thing. Just
sure.
To say, this is what's going on. Maybe we've got a new member. Maybe we're just going to like go in and look at the equipment and see if anything's expired or if we need to update anything.
Yeah.
But anybody can join. And
okay.
It, like I said, the CARTs are set up countywide. So if you go into the website that we're going to give you, It's the Department of Agriculture Animal Emergency, if you just want to search for it.
Okay.
And you'll see CART, and then you'll see how to join, what training you need. Then you'll see other links on there of how to do the right thing when an emergency comes around, how to be prepared. Little things that you don't even think of in your daily life.
Okay, and I will put in the show notes the clickable link to that website, so if you have it.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think it is kind of a long URL.
It is. It's like this. Yeah, that's why I just keep giving you the title of the what's on the page.
Right. So if I join CART and do the training, does it cost me anything?
No. Most, and I shouldn't say no. Most CART training is it will be reimbursable.
Okay.
Okay. Some CARTs do more in-house training than others. Sometimes you travel to another CART to get your training, but that is usually covered by your county.
Okay.
Okay. And even some of the training that I have paid for over the years, it's minimal. I'm talking less than $25.
Oh, wow.
For like a whole day class.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. It's because most of CART training is subsidized in New Jersey.
Okay, subsidized by the states? Oh, that's great. Okay. So you've mentioned training a lot. What kind of training is it? What would someone be learning?
Okay, you're learning a little bit of everything. You're learning everything from how the incident command system works in general. You're learning animal disaster for small animals. And then there's also another class that you can go to that's usually at a CART that's more rural than what we are here in Middlesex County. That's horses and large animal livestock, because you can't handle them the same way you handle dogs and cats.
Oh, wow. So CART also handles livestock.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I'm thinking, it's pets, dogs, cats, birds.
No. And people don't realize that, and I talk about Middlesex County because that's where I belong and that's where I live.
Right.
Middlesex County has all kinds of farms.
Sure.
And horses and cattle and chickens. And so in flooding situations, you might get put, like, setting up corrals. Okay. What we tell people, though, is if you know how to handle a horse, just sit back. Okay. Don't try what you thought you saw on TV.
Right.
Okay, if you haven't been to the large animal handling class, there's other things that you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want anybody getting hurt.
Yeah, we don't want anybody getting hurt in the process of trying to help.
Yeah, because, large animals, horses, cattle.
If you're not trained in large animal rescue, there are other things you can do. And it might be just setting up the pens. It might be doing the paperwork as the owners check them in. So don't think you can't go to that if that's the disaster, but don't tell them up front, and your team, our teams basically know who handles what.
Right.
Yeah.
So you could basically be talking about hundreds of livestock.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. We have some very large horse farms in Middlesex County.
Oh, yeah.
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 And people don't realize that. And then there's the other thing that happens if it's a really large, and it doesn't have to be large, it just has to impact the area. It could be isolated, but if it impacts an area where you've got a lot of horses or you've got a lot of cattle or you've got a lot of even chickens, okay, and they need to be moved, you might get called out to help with that.
Okay. So to help the farmers.
To help, yep. Yep.
Got it. Okay. Well, I had no idea, but I always wondered what happens to livestock when these things hit. Even right now, as we're recording, we're in the midst of Hurricane Harvey in Texas, and of course, it's hitting an urban area, but there are suburban and rural.
Yeah, there's a lot of livestock being moved.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder, what happens to them? So it's good to know that there's plans in place to help them and the farmers, because I mean, that's their livelihood.
Right.
Yeah, so that's it's good to know. So what other kind of training? Like, are you learning things like CPR? Or
our team is actually dual certified. A lot of our team is actually dual certified. They're CART members, but they're also CERT members, which is County Emergency Response, which is for people.
Okay.
And what we did even before that was standard, we had decided, our team had decided, we're going to do first aid and CPR. And then we did an animal first aid and CPR class.
Okay.
As well as human.
Oh, wow.
Okay. There's also vets that sit on the team, vet techs. We have a vet that oversees everything that goes on.
So is the vet the leader?
No.
Okay.
He sits on the team like the rest of us.
Okay.
But when it comes to the site, any medical necessity goes through him. Like when you're checking in animals.
Yep.
If I think the animal's sick, then instead of putting it over here in the regular shelter, it goes over to be checked before we put it
with everyone else. Got it.
Yes.
Okay. And then, this may seem silly, but do you take into the shelter little animals like, gerbils or lizards?
Well, that usually happens on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Okay. The exotics, as we label them. Small animals, really like hamsters and stuff like that, we have to be careful because birds need certain conditions.
Sure.
Okay. Your lizards, I don't particularly know a lot about them, but I know they need a heat rock. They need a lamp. They need to stay warm. So that we will try to help any animal, but it's case by case.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of us don't know them as well, but we'll take just about anything when we have to.
This is going to be a really out there question, Sue, so I'll apologize up front. But I'm wondering, like, do the CARTs work with local zoos if there's a need to evacuate a zoo, or do zoos pretty much have their own evacuation plans?
You know what? I really don't know the answer to that, but I can find out. In theory, I would think most zoos or sanctuaries have their own plan.
Right.
But I don't think it would be far-fetched to think that in an emergency that CART would be called in to help.
Yeah, we have quite a lot, like you said, of zoos in this area. Along with sanctuaries, like there's the Raptor Trust, which is, I don't think that's Middlesex County. It might be Morris.
Yeah, they're up further.
It's up north.
But I'm sure they have some kind of deal they have their own emergency management plan.
Right.
With the Office of Emergency Management.
Yeah, I would imagine.
But I wouldn't, the bigger places, if it disaster struck, I would think that there's a compact with call for help.
Right.
Just like if there's a disaster in Union County, and Union County's taxed, most of the CARTs have compacts with the other counties close by to get help.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm trying to imagine something happening in the Bronx.
Right.
What are we going to do with all those elephants and giraffes and lions? So, okay, interesting. So sorry for the curveball.
That's okay. Like I said, it's interesting that you say that, but I would think that they have their own plan and they would just call for help if they needed it.
Okay. Now, I mentioned if people want more about CARTs in New Jersey, they can go to the website that we're going to list in the show notes that they can link right to. I do know, after doing some reading, that other states have similar organizations. They may not be called CARTs, but as you had said, Sue, they should contact their Office of Emergency Management.
Right.
If they want to find out, like, what do they have in place.
Right.
Okay. Great. So, what should I do before a disaster?
All right. You should do two things. And it's more than two things, but I'm going to classify it as two things. You should put an emergency bag together for you and your family.
Okay.
Means 3 to 5 days of medication, especially anything that's specialty.
Okay.
You should have.
Like a special food.
Right. Like okay. Special food. And you should do the same thing for your pets.
Okay.
Like if you have a pet that's on medication, 3 to 5 days of medication.
Okay.
If the dog is on a special diet, maybe 2 or 3 bags, little bags, like zip, like the quart Ziploc bags or something.
Sure. Oh yeah.
Of food.
Okay.
And just don't leave it sit there for months on month. You have to keep
right.
Just like you have to rotate food in your house, you have to rotate this food. But you should have a copy of any of their necessary medical records.
Okay.
You should always have shot records. Some shelters will not take the animals. Two things. You either have to have shot records or you have to have them vaccinated right then and there.
Okay.
That's why a vet sits on the team.
Ah, okay.
That's part of the reason a vet sits on the team.
So is it like, say I imagine it's like rabies and distemper, right. Probably the two big ones.
Two big ones.
Let's say I evacuate. I'm in such a hurry. I don't, for whatever reason, I can't grab my bag
right.
That has the records. I take my greyhound to a shelter. I say I don't have the records. A vet's going to give him the shots.
Yep.
Is that bad? If they don't need them to have them?
There's no hard, fast evidence, but... you can read about over-vaccination all the time.
Yeah.
So if you get a rabies tag when you get your rabies shots,
right.
Put it on their collar.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yes. Put it on their collar. I mean, I've got a friend who had, well, he doesn't have as many dogs as he used to, but he didn't like the tags hanging on the collar because he did crate some of his dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So what he would do is he had all their... rabies tags
yep.
On his keys.
Oh.
And the keys, and even if he didn't have them on the keys, he had them in the car.
Okay.
So he always had the rabies tags. So better something than nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, so even if you just have a rabies tag, that's at least telling me that's you're valid if you don't have the paperwork. But you should be able to... If you can, and with greyhounds, I know it's a little more difficult, you should have a crate for every dog you own.
Mm,
okay.
Yeah.
I know that's difficult because greyhound crates are so big and they're not always that portable. Most carts have crates on site.
Okay.
Smaller animals do need to come in a crate. Cats need to come in a
sure.
crate. Things like that. So these are like just things that, you know, just things we don't think about.
Yeah.
You know, you give your dog that medicine every day, but now you're displaced, and if you don't know what the medicine is, and that's the other thing. Some people just know, oh, my dog takes some kind of thyroid medication. They don't know what,
yeah.
And they don't know the dose.
Yeah.
So the next time you get that refilled, save the bottle. If the dog gets one pill a day, put 5 pills in the bottle, throw it in the bag.
Yep.
Okay, little things that, you know... Not that we just don't think of it.
Yeah.
Because these things don't happen. But this way, God forbid something happens, you have it.
Yeah.
Even if all you're doing is leaving your house because you don't have power and you're going to a friend's house, you know, 3 towns over that has power.
Yeah.
It would be bad not to take his medicine for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, because now I've got to trek all the way back.
Right.
Yeah.
Or by the time you realize you don't have it, it's flooded and you can't get back home.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Food. Food, if your dog's on special food, it's always better to have what your dog's eaten. If not, the cart teams have food available. It's usually the bland ID because pretty much everybody can eat that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not a lot of issues.
Yeah.
So those are the things to do before.
Okay.
All right. And during... I mean, when my biggest thing about during is when they tell you it's time to evacuate, take yourself and your animals in your car or on the bus that's coming around and get out. Please don't put other people, first responders, at risk that are going to have to come back and get you in a boat.
Right.
Okay. Don't try to hold out in your house because it's never flooded before, but this is the worst hurricane we've ever had.
Yeah.
Okay. Leave. Just leave. If everything's okay, you come back in a day or so. Okay. If it's not, you didn't put anybody at risk and you didn't put yourself and your animals at risk.
And be thankful that your home is standing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least in the shelters, you don't have all the creature comforts, but you have power, you have food, you have water, you have a bathroom.
Is there Wi-Fi?
It depends on where the shelter is. But, I mean, it's better.
I'm thinking of the teenagers.
Yes. It's better than being in your house.
Yeah.
And not being able to charge your phone, not being able to listen to what's going on the radio, because now your batteries are dead.
Yep.
So when people come around and tell you it's time to evacuate, they're doing it for a reason. They're not out there in the storm doing this for their health.
Right.
Please leave when people tell you it's time to evacuate.
Yeah. Yeah. And time and time and time again, we're seeing it, as I said, right now. There is horrendous flooding in Texas.
That they never thought would be that bad.
Right. And the evacuation call went out to, I believe, some, but not all.
Right.
And we just saw, sadly, a police officer in Texas pass away doing a rescue.
Yes.
Yeah, he was killed. Evacuate. We were asked to evacuate. And Sue, you and I were talking before we started recording today about how the rescue of animals, bringing animals with you, started really with Katrina in New Orleans.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about that a little?
What happened there is people stayed because they wouldn't let their pets go.
Sure.
Okay. And they found out that that's a bad thing. So now just about any organization I've worked with will take pets. And you saw that in Texas.
Right.
Okay, you saw the boats taking the pets.
Yeah.
Okay. You may not be able to stay with your pet continually, but your pet will be taken care of.
Right.
Okay. You will be reunited with your pet. I personally do not see a reason to leave your pet behind.
Sure.
Okay, and that's why I stress so much about when they come and tell you it's time to leave, put yourself in the car with the dog and leave, or whatever pets you have.
Right.
And leave, because this way you still have some control.
Yeah. Can you describe to me what it's like, what's a day in the life like in the shelter for the people, and a day in the life of an animal in a cart facility?
People-wise, I mean, it's close quarters, depending on how big the shelter is and what the demand is. But there's food. You're in a controlled environment for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You have the facilities you need. You may not have all the creature comforts in the world.
Right, right.
But you usually have electricity, you'll have food, you'll have water, you'll have a blanket, probably an army cot to sleep on in some instances. You'll have something. As far as the pets go, you check your pet in, we settle your pet, we get some information from you. Yes, you have to do some paperwork. Yes, you have to agree to certain things. Nothing is outrageous. And what you're agreeing to is to come back and take care of your pet on a time schedule that we work out.
Okay.
Okay. And that's for during the disaster. Okay. We are not meant to be the animal shelter.
Right.
Quote unquote. We are the rescue facility during this disaster. So as soon as you find somewhere to go, like grandma's house, and you can get to grandma's house and take your pet. We are not the shelter. We are not daycare. But most people find it comforting to know that their pets are taken care of and they're only right down the hall. And like once the weather was nice for that fire. And like the next morning, people came in and the couple of pets that stayed overnight, they came in and got them and took them for the day. Mm. They didn't even bother, you know, bringing them right back.
So they could just go outside and hang out with them.
They went to somebody's house. They went to the park. And then they brought them back later. That's the whole idea. The idea is to make it as normal as you can. It's not going to be great. Are you going to be inconvenienced? Yes. Are you going to deal with some bad things? Yes. But by evacuating and going to the shelter with your animal, you're safe.
You're safe.
And you're not putting other people at risk to try to save you later.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have a little story. So we've been hearing on the news, again, as we're recording this, we're in the midst of the Hurricane Harvey in Texas. And on the news, we've been seeing how a lot of animals are being evacuated out of the area. And they are going to other states, into shelters in those other states, where the shelters in these states are looking for homes now for those animals. And someone said to me, how can they do that? How can they take people's animals and give them away? Well, the answer is, they're not.
What they're doing is they're taking the shelter animals.
Right.
Okay, and they're shipping them to whoever can take them. Right. So they're shipping to another shelter in another state so that they have room to shelter the loose and everything animals.
Right.
Okay, so that you can be reunited. You should always have some type of identification on your dog.
Sure.
Okay, like I said, I feel so very bad for those animals that were left tied to something.
Oh.
Oh my God.
It's heartbreaking.
But yeah, they're not shipping, you know, they say, like they said, the Katrina dogs.
Right.
The Katrina dogs that were shipped were not your pet.
Right, they weren't people's dogs.
Right.
They were shelter dogs.
They were shelter dogs that were shipped to make room for the Katrina dogs.
Right.
And then as the Katrina situation subsided and pets weren't claimed, okay, there were a bunch of these animals that were never claimed.
Sure. Well, people may have died.
Right. People may have died. People may not have been able to claim them. So after a certain amount of time, and I'm not even sure what kind of time frame they used, then these dogs became shelter pets.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just, you know, I thought it was interesting because, I just assumed people knew that.
No. No. People, you know, and when you hear what they're doing, the news doesn't explain it well enough. The dogs that they're getting are not the dogs that were floating in the water.
Right.
That Harry and Joe and Cindy and everybody brought out.
Right.
These are dogs that were already in the shelters and they need to make room.
Right. So, the point is, if for some reason you do become separated from your animals, they're not being adopted out.
No.
They are, if they've been rescued, they're in the shelter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And they may, it, you know, depending on how bad the situation is down there and how it goes, they may be miles away.
Yeah.
But they're there somewhere.
They're there.
And all of those animals are supposed to be cataloged and will be cataloged. It may take some time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, before it becomes a full database, but it will become a full database. And the ones that had collars on are the ones that are going to get home quicker.
Right.
With tags.
Right.
Microchipping. There's a big thing. Some people say microchipping is no good. Some people say it is. You know what? It's one of those things that's relatively inexpensive. You do it. You keep your information current. And you get a phone call saying, hey, I've got your dog.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the shelters, once everything calms down there, they will start scanning all of these dogs if they're not doing it on intake.
Yep.
And they probably will rescan them later when everything settles down.
Yep.
Just to see, because chips sometimes migrate.
Right.
So, you know, so microchipping is relatively inexpensive, and it's another, you know, God forbid your dog slips its collar even out on a walk. At least if somebody finds it and takes it to a shelter, they can ID it.
Yeah, exactly. And I always tell people, you know, like as far as my greyhounds are concerned, there's nothing is foolproof, but they're so protected. If somehow I get separated from them, they're microchipped. They have their tag collars. Their collars never, with their tags, never ever come off my dogs. You'll never see a naked dog in my house. The third thing is that I have them GPS'd, so I have trackers on them. So, of right. course, in a, they are waterproof, but in a flood or even after a few days, the batteries are going to die. So that may not be too helpful.
Right, but it's you've got layers.
But there's layers. And as parents of retired racing greyhounds, they're tattooed.
Yes.
They have unique tattoos in their ears, and those tattoos, like I said, they're unique to the dogs. They can be looked up.
Right.
And the dogs can be identified.
Correct. That's a national database that anybody can go into.
Yeah.
And look up any dog at any given time.
Right. Right. And track where the dog go. Yeah. Yeah. So, so that's one advantage that we have as greyhound owners are those tattoos. You know, which they had for the racing careers, but certainly benefit us.
In that respect, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the disaster's over with. Let's say I was separated from my dog. I haven't been contacted by anybody.
You sometimes have to do your due diligence. You have to go to the shelters. And you have to look. Because you have to realize that the shelters are overwhelmed right now. So when you call looking for the black and white greyhound, you got a better chance of getting an answer than I do calling for a black and gray mutt.
Yeah.
If you have a black and gray mutt, you need to, you know, get in the car and drive to the shelters and do it kind of systematically. Do it, start where you are, do the closest ones.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that in most of these instances, there should be kind of a central point that you can start and you can ask if they know where this dog is. And if that, like I said, if you don't have a unique dog, it's harder for you.
Right.
It's, you know, if you have the pit mix, you're gonna have to go check, and you're gonna have to go to the shelters. I mean, even when you have a loose dog and you call the shelter and you say, "Is my dog there?" You may get told no because your description is not what this other person sees in that dog.
Right.
And so it's always good to go to the shelters.
Go in person.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. One other thing I should mention when I talked about identifying your dog, don't put your home phone number on the tag. Put your mobile number.
Yes.
Because if your home has been flooded and you're not there, or phone lines are down, or let's just say your house is no longer there, no one's going to reach you on that home phone number, obviously. So use your cell phone number on your tags.
Right.
Yeah. What if, Sue, after a disaster, I return home, let's say my home is fine, and lo and behold, running loose in my neighborhood is a dog that's obviously hungry, somehow was in, you know, I can assume the dog's been in the disaster and is lost. What should I do?
Find out where, in that area, you want to find out where the dogs are going. Animal control would be a good place to start.
Okay.
Your town. Some towns have animal control. Some of it's countywide.
Okay.
Call, even if you call the police department, say, look, I've got this dog, just like a regular day. I've got this dog. He's hanging out. He was in my front yard. I got him in the backyard in the fence. I fed him. He's relatively friendly. And depending on what stage they are in the disaster, the dog may be in your yard for a little while. The dog may be in your yard for a couple of days.
Mm.
Okay. But yeah, you always want to report if you find somebody. And if you start with the police department, they'll usually put you in touch with who you need to talk to.
Okay.
But animal control, like some towns actually have an animal control number. If you look at your town directory, you have an animal control number. And then sometimes you get a little quicker response because you're talking directly to somebody in animal control.
Okay. So you've given us a lot to think about and excellent information about how to prepare and react when disaster strikes. Thanks for coming on the About Greyhounds podcast. Again, always a pleasure. For Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, this has been Jacqueline Howard with Sue Smith, and this has been an About Greyhounds podcast episode. Thanks, Sue.
Thank you very much.
The timing of this episode is especially important. September is National Disaster Preparedness Month. As Sue and I mentioned while we were recording, the country, the world really, were watching Texas, which had been so devastated by Hurricane Harvey. And soon following the recording of this episode, we witnessed the devastation in Florida from Hurricane Harvey. In the show notes of this episode, you'll find resources from Homeland Security on what you can do to be prepared in the event of a disaster. There's also information in the episode about CART that you can link to. You can also contact your local Office of Emergency Management for available resources in your area. And if you are outside the United States, do contact the authorities and find out what resources are available to you so that you can be best prepared if disaster strikes where you are. Stay safe, everyone. Until next week, this is Jacqueline Howard, and this has been an About Greyhounds podcast.